Mesdames et messieurs, permettez-moi, avant de présenter Madame Eckroth, qui va commencer cette séance de l'après-midi, de dire peut-être deux mots personnels, moi aussi, parce que ça fait maintenant 30 ans que je suis venue à Paris. J'étais très jeune, j'étais ce que les Américains appellent une « non-entity », et j'ai reçu donc toute la générosité extraordinaire de Jean-Pierre Vernant, qui m'a tout de suite permis de travailler dans son groupe dans la rue Monsieur le Prince, au centre qui ne s'appelait pas encore Centre Louis Gernet, d'après son propre maître. Alors donc je suis vraiment touchée. Très touchée que mon amie Stella Jorgoudi m'a demandé de présider cette première séance de ce colloque à la mémoire de Jean-Pierre Vernant, et je suis sûre que nous tous allons profiter énormément aussi au cours de ce colloque de toutes les inspirations que Jean-Pierre Vernant a généreusement donné à ses lecteurs et à ses collaborateurs. Et moi, je dois dire que pour moi, tout ce que j'ai essayé de faire dans mon coin en ce qui concerne la religion grecque, c'est pas possible, ça n'aurait pas été possible sans cette inspiration de la part de ce maître, parce que quand je suis venue là, il y a 30 ans, en Allemagne, la religion grecque était à peine vue, à peine regardée dans les études classiques, et aussi la sociologie de la religion, tout ça, le comparatisme, c'était absolument inexistant. Donc, je sais tout ce que je lui dois, et je crois ce que je vous ai dit là tout à l'heure, c'est vraiment vrai, pas seulement pour moi, mais pour beaucoup d'autres étrangers aussi qui sont venus ici. Et donc là, je vous présente une de ces étrangères qui ont profité de ce contact à l'école de Jean-Pierre Vernant. C'est Gunnel Eckroth, donc, qui est chercheur à l'Université de Stockholm, et qui a travaillé sur le culte héroïque et a publié sa thèse dans les suppléments de la revue Carnos en 2002. Maintenant, elle travaille sur le sacrifice grec dans la pratique, dans les croyances et dans la théorie, et elle va nous faire part maintenant, je crois, de quelques résultats de son travail. Merci.
Merci. I would like to begin with thanking the organizers for inviting me. It's a great honor to be here. Greek gods, in many senses, resembled their human worshippers. They took on human bodily shape, though bigger and more beautiful. They could see, hear, smell, and taste, and they displayed human emotions. Gods even had blood and could bleed. But in spite of these similarities to a mortal being, every aspect of the divine body expressed the immortality of the gods. The loss of divine blood never resulted in life-threatening harm. The flesh of the gods could not decay. But what about bones? Were the Greek gods perceived as having skeletons inside their bodies? Bones, osteia, in Greek, clearly are a prominent concept when defining what is immortal and what is mortal. After death, when a corpse has decomposed or been burnt on a funeral pyre, bones are all that remains. They are white, hard, and indestructible. For a Greek hero, the bones were extremely important, constituting the focal power and the focal point of the power of the cult. But as the skeleton will only become visible after death, the bones of the gods must have been something of a non-issue. If you could see the bones of a god, he would no longer be one. But even if bones of the gods themselves were of little interest, bones offered to the gods were certainly highly significant. Bones definitely lie in the center of Greek animal sacrifice, thysia, as they are burnt on the altars as the gods' share creating a fragrant smoke, an action constituting the principal means of communication between gods and men. This is evident from our earliest and most explicitly exegetical source, Hesiod's account of Zeus and Prometheus' dealings at Mekone, described in the Theogony. Here the handling and slaughter, handling of the slaughtered ox and its skin, meat, fat, and most of all its bones, is presented as an explanation for why the Greeks burned the ostia levka, the white bones, on the altars of the gods. In Jean-Pierre Vernant's analysis on the role and meaning of sacrificial ritual, which takes its starting point in the myth of Prometheus, the bones are central for the understanding of Greek sacrifice. According to Vernant, the structure of Tusia's sacrifice aims at defining and separating gods and men on the basis of what they ate and how, but this ritual also constituted a way to unite immortals and mortals by recalling earlier times when they still lived and ate together. The gods are given the bare bones, which are burnt on the altar, simply since they are immortal gods with no needs for regular food. By sniffing the smoke, they prove their immortality. Men, on the other hand, show that they are mortal by receiving and consuming all what can be eaten on an animal. Prometheus' division, meant to benefit man, actually turns out to be a flawed gift, since it seals man's fate as a mortal being. In Vernant's argument, the bones make up the best part of the victim, as they represent what is immortal, both in men and in animals. Vernant's work on Greek animal sacrifice is to a great extent anchored in the practical execution of the rituals. The importance of the concrete details for our understanding of Greek sacrifice and its meaning was clearly spelled out by Vernant in his introductory speech at the Collège de France in 1975. And he spoke about the selection and preparation and execution of the slaughter, the butchering according to rules, which allow the isolation of inner parts, long bones with the basin and the tail, the equal division of the meat, various modes of cooking, what was entirely burnt for the gods, what was grilled in the altar fire, or boiled in the cauldron, who would receive which parts, edible or not, with a religious purpose or not, whether the meat was consumed on the spot or taken away or sold. Such details will reveal the sacrificial theology which is represented by the foundation myths, Vernant argued. Today, I want to explore the implications of Vernant's methodological approach by focusing in particular on one category of empirical evidence, osteological material found in Greek sanctuaries. In what sense can the bone evidence contribute to the notion of Greek sacrifice as a means for expressing relations between gods and men? Is the importance of the burning of the white bones, the ostia levka, reflected in the osteological evidence? In the last decades, the study of animal bones has opened up new possibilities for understanding and addressing the performance of Greek sacrifice, and in particular, the practiced reality of Greek cult. Bones are in fact the only category of evidence for Greek religion which is constantly increasing. Furthermore, the osteological material provides possibilities to evaluate written and iconographical sources, and it may also disclose previously unrecognized cultic actions. Just to give you a few examples, recently published bone material clearly demonstrates that dogs and horses were eaten at ritual meals in sanctuaries, together with the meat from cattle, sheep, goat, and pigs. Wild animals, most often deer and wild boars, but also bears and foxes, could be consumed on these occasions as well. The context of the bone material may allow us to distinguish between sacrificial victims killed at the altar and other animals that were eaten, and to recognize different degrees of sacredness of the meat consumed by the ancient Greeks. At present, there are more than 25 sanctuaries which have yielded bone material which has been analyzed and published in sufficient detail for our purpose here. And to this map, you could add sites on Cyprus, in South Italy, and Northern Africa. Bones from sanctuaries are often simply regarded as remains of sacrifices, but finer distinctions have to be made. By looking at the types of bones, the degree of fragmentation, the presence of cut marks and traces of burning, the osteological evidence can be demonstrated to reflect different kinds of activity at the site. We may distinguish between the activity at the altar, that is the burning of the god's portion, the consumption debris, the leftovers, the bones leftovers after the worshippers had eaten the meat, and butchering refuse, parts of which were discarded at the initial division of the animal after it had been killed. But other kinds of ritual treatments of bones may also emerge. If we approach the sacrificial process from the concrete details, we first have to consider which bones we are talking about here. Vernant identified the ostia levca variously as long bones, together with the pelvis and the tail, as the vertebral column, together with some of these parts, and also as the fore and the back legs, and that is pretty much most part of the animal. Within modern scholarship, Hesiod's ostia levca are usually taken to signify the thigh bones, femora, indicated here by the red circle, which had been stripped of meat, as Homer speaks of Meroi and later authors of Meria. Hesiod's text offers no additional precision of these bones, but in the Working Days, men are encouraged to burn the shining thigh bones for the gods, Agla, Meria, Caen, supporting the notion that in particular femora are referred to. But the written sources make clear that apart from these thigh bones, also the osphys, the part that the Greeks call the osphys, that is the tail and the sacrum bone, indicated in blue, were selected to be burnt on the altars. Prometheus' prominent role in the institution of animal sacrifice is evident by the fact that the earliest mention of the term osphys is actually in the Prometheus Bound by Aeschylus, where the Titan states that he has taught mankind divination by burning the god's portion, said to consist of legs covered with fat and the long osphys. Apart from the texts, the Athenian vase paintings often show the osphys lying in the altar fire, which you see here. And here you see a modern osphys, where it would curve and rise due to the effect of the heat from the fire. Now, let us turn to the bone evidence. There are at least 15 bone assemblages which can be identified as deriving from the god's part of the sacrifice burnt on the altar. These deposits date from the late geometric to the Hellenistic period and are spread out all over the Greek world. From these assemblages, it is evident that both the meria, the thigh bones, and the osphys, the tail, could be placed in the fire. The preferred offering seems to have been thigh bones, sometimes together with the kneecaps, though the deposits may also include fragments of the sacrum bone, that's the backbone of the basin, and the tail bones. In the material, which is contemporary with Hesiod, there is a clear preference for thigh bones. To give you one example, at the altar debris at the late geometric levels of the Lair Sacrificiel at Eretria, the bones consisted to 85% of thigh bones and 6% of kneecaps. The earliest deposit from an altar known so far, recovered in a proto-geometric level at under the Artemision at Ephesus, most of the bones were, or it was more, almost entirely made up of burnt femora. To include the osphys among what was burnt for the gods seems to have been an archaic practice which gradually increased in importance. At Isthmia, for example, the altar debris dating from the 7th to mid-5th century, the thigh bones dominate, while tail bones do not become frequent until the latter half of the 5th century. The only deposit clearly dominated by part of the osphys is the altar of Aphrodite Urania at Athens, dating to the early classical period. In all, the osteological evidence confirms the information we get from the written and iconographical sources as to the importance of burning thigh bones and tails on the altars. Vernant constantly emphasized that the ostia levca must be bare bones, from which all the meat had been removed. And this has also been scholarly consensus until Guy Berthiaume, in the volume La Cuisine et l'Hôtel in 2005, suggested that entire legs, meat and all, could often have been burnt at the Tusia, depending on the piety of the individual worshipper. As the Greek terms meria and meroi can mean both thigh bones and thigh, neither Hesiod nor Vernon should be taken so literally. Apart from the terminology, Berthiaume refers to a speech by Libanius, that is the 4th century after Christ, describing a sacrifice by Seleucus I, preceding the foundation of the city of Antioch in 301 before Christ, in which an eagle steals the burning meria from the fire. A series of Roman coins, you see one example here, issued from Hadrian to Caracalla, depicts an eagle holding an entire leg, here, meaty thigh, shank, and hoof. Berthiaume's proposal is indeed very interesting, but it does not correspond to the osteological evidence. If the entire back leg was put in the fire on a regular basis, the altar deposits would presumably contain not only the thigh bones, but also quantities of the lower part of the leg, indicated in blue here. And this is not the case. There is a clear dominance of femora in the altar deposits, while lower parts of the back leg are few or usually completely absent. Judging by the bones, the ostia levka, and in particular the meria, consisted of thigh bones alone, not of entire legs. It may still be possible to argue that only the thigh section of the back leg, including both the bone and the meat, was burnt, but this is not what we see on the Roman coins. And I should point out here that unfortunately, cannot the preserved burnt bones reveal if the body parts had been put in the fire with the meat still attached, or stripped bare, since the heat of the fire reduces them all to the same calcined state. However, if entire legs were burnt at the Seleucus sacrifice, as depicted on the Roman coins, this action may be explained as a part of an East Mediterranean and non-Greek ritual tradition. To burn the entire back leg is stipulated at the inauguration of Hebrew priests in the Old Testament. And interestingly, the only site which, with evidence of entire burnt back legs is the sanctuary of Apollo Hylates at Kurion on Cyprus. So still, the common practice at the Greek Tusia was apparently to burn the thigh bone alone and not the entire leg. If we now return to the altar deposits and look at the species present, there is a predominance of sheep and goat, animals which were both easily available and not very expensive. At a few sites, such as Isthmia and the sanctuary of Poseidon and Amphitrite, Tenos, cattle are in the majority. What is striking, no matter the divinity concerned or the time period, is how rarely pigs' bones are found in the burnt debris from the altars. There are a few instances of femora, but hardly any remains of sacrum bones and caudal vertebra. How is this scarcity of pig bones to be interpreted? It may be due to accidental preservation, but it is also possible that the Greeks did not sacrifice pigs in the same manner as sheep, goats, and cattle. The sacrificial calendars make clear that full-grown pigs were used as victims, but they were very expensive. Piglets, which were cheap and abundant, are more frequently mentioned. Votive reliefs, like this one, often show pigs being brought by worshippers, and there are also a couple of vase paintings depicting the same animals. Furthermore, pigs were definitely eaten in sanctuaries, as they are presented quite frequently and abundantly in the consumption debris. The bone evidence can be taken to indicate that the parts presented to the gods when a pig was sacrificed were different than when a tusia was performed with cattle or sheep and goats. For some reason, thigh bones of pigs were not cut out to be burnt, and the tail section not put in the fire, although a pig tail curves just as much when put in the fire as a cow tail when exposed to the heat. And this is perfectly clear from some experiments I conducted this summer. You see two examples here. Communication between gods and men could presumably be accomplished in a different manner. In this context, the pig sacrifice described in Book 14 in the Odyssey is of central interest. Here the pig herder Eumaeus slaughters a boar, burns some hair from the forehead, as well as some meat. He finally puts aside portions of cooked meat for Hermes and the nymphs. There is no talk about bones being cut out or burnt. Eumaeus' treatment of this boar has often been explained by him sacrificing at home, at his own hearth and not in a sanctuary. But the fact that the victim is a pig may have been a major reason for why the ritual was performed in this way. But the osteological evidence from Greek sanctuaries also indicates alternative ritual treatments of animals, such as the deposition of bones without use of fire, or a more extensive burning than the select parts at the Thysia. How are we to fit such instances into the Thysia structure, and how do they relate to Vernon's perception of the use of bones at animal sacrifice? Unburnt bones in sanctuaries are usually fragmented and bear cut marks and are to be identified as leftovers of meals. And the absence of traces of fire demonstrates the importance of boiling as the cooking method. But there are also depositions of unburnt bones which reflect sacrificial rituals. The bone evidence from Didyma in Asia Minor is particularly interesting. It was recovered northwest of the Temple of Apollo in a series of wells and a water channel where the bones must have been dumped in Roman times, but they probably derive from at least the Hellenistic period. The material consists of mainly of long bones of cattle, as well as some long bones, mandibles and horns from sheep and goat, and occasional pig mandibles. All the bones are unburnt, and the surfaces show marks from the meat having been cut or scraped off while still raw. This is not ordinary dinner debris, as the bones have not been butchered into smaller portions or split to access the marrow. The well-preserved nature of the bones suggests that they were probably kept in some kind of osteotheke before they were finally discarded. These bones are clearly ostealevka, though treated in a different way than at the Thysia, as to the selections of which bones to keep and the fact that they are intact. The ritual purpose must have been fulfilled without transforming them to smoke and ash. And the excavator here drew a parallel with the so-called Carian sacrifices mentioned in the Suda, said to consist of defleshed and inedible bones. But unburnt bones have also been recovered at the sanctuary of Demeter and Kore at Cyrene. Almost 80% of the bones from this site came from pigs, mainly piglets, and clearly represent consumption debris. However, a concentration of unburnt bones from the back region, primarily thigh bones and basins, with no cut marks, were recovered together with a large quantity of charcoal and ash. This material was not in situ, but presumably represents some kind of ritual activity. The lack of burnt pig bones noted in the altar deposits elsewhere may perhaps be explained by the deposition of thigh bones in this manner. Such depositions of unburnt bones may have served as a kind of memorial, similar to the accumulations of horns found at some sites, or the bucrania depicted on vase paintings or used as altar decorations, or on this unique stele from Thespiae to the right. The deposition of the bones may have commemorated that communication with the divine had taken place by the help of an animal victim, though with a ritual divergent from a Thysia. Piglets in particular seem to have been used in ritual actions which were different from Thysia. The Austrian osteologist Gerhard Forstenpointer has even suggested that the deposition of very young piglets and the consumption of pig meat are to be identified as a specific kind of ritual distinct and parallel to the Thysia. At the Demeter and Kore sanctuary at Mytilene, a pit was found containing only remains of unburnt piglets, while at the Artemision of Ephesus, there is a huge quantity of unburnt piglet bones deriving from all parts of the animals' bodies. This treatment may be connected with the practices of depositing piglets into pits, megara, in association with the Thesmophoria. But piglets were also recovered in deposits which consist entirely of burnt bones. The sanctuary of Demeter and Kore at Mytilene also yielded ash-filled pits with thousands of calcined juvenile piglet remains from all parts of the skeleton. and at the sanctuary of Demeter and Kore at Corinth, the piglet bones were heavily charred and had apparently been burnt in the pit where they were recovered, indicated in red. Such actions must be distinct from the handling of piglets at the Thesmophoria, which were to be exhumed and spread on the fields eventually. Here we seem to be facing some kind of holocaust, the purpose of which in the cult of Demeter is unknown. Another highly interesting case of extended burning of bones is found in the sanctuary of Poseidon at Isthmia. This material is of two types. First of all, burnt bones, seen to the right, found in connection with a long altar in front of the temple. And secondly, unburnt bones, to the lower left, dumped in a large reservoir to the southwest, in the area where the dining took place. The archaic and classical deposits recovered at the altar consist of cattle and sheep and goat bones. 98% are burnt. Hindquarters, and especially thigh bones, are very common, characteristics of a typical altar debris of the Tusia kind. The interesting fact is that among the burnt bones from the altar, elements from the rest of the body are represented as well, with one exception, the forelegs, which are almost entirely missing. The bones from the altar area are to be matched against the bones found in the dining area to the southwest. Among these bones, 92% of which are unburnt. Forelegs are overrepresented, and there were very few thigh bones. It seems likely that some of the animals were sacrificed at the altar and later eaten in the area to southwest. But let us look more closely at these bones from the altar. Though thigh bones are particularly common here, the altar deposits included elements from all other parts of the victim's bodies, apart from the forelegs. How are we to understand the ritual that took place at the altar? The following scenario could be imagined. The victims were first killed at the altar, and the thigh bones cut out and burnt, hence the high number of femora. The forelegs were removed, perhaps as priestly perquisites. The rest of the victims' bodies were then butchered. Certain parts may have been displayed, either cooked or raw, next to the altar or even on the altar, as the altar is 40 meters long and burning only took place at the southern end. At a later stage, some bones would have been freed from meat and burnt in the altar fire, thus resulting in an altar deposit consisting of elements from the tail, the thorax, and the head, as well as the back legs. The meat could have been cooked and eaten at the altar or taken away to be consumed in the dining area to the southwest, where the forelegs definitely were eaten. How are we to understand this extended burning of bones? What did the gods' portion really exist of? The ritual I have constructed from the bones at Isthmia may seem hypothetical, but it can actually be matched with the ritual described in the great Lex Sacra from Selinus. This inscription is, as far as I know, the only one which contains an explicit mention of the burning of bare bones, ostia, in a Greek sacred law. Among the rituals prescribed is a sacrifice to Zeus Meilichios, and the text reads as follows. To Zeus Meilichios, in the plot of Euthydamos, let them sacrifice a ram, and let it also be possible to sacrifice after a year. Let him take out the public hiera, and put out a table before them, and burn a tie, and the offerings from the table, and the bones. Let no meat be carried out of the precinct, and let him invite whomever he wishes. The ritual outlined here is clearly a Tusia sacrifice with a so-called Theoxenia ritual performed at the same time. We can imagine that the ram is killed, presumably thigh bones and or the osphys are cut out and burnt. This procedure is passed over in silence by the inscription, just as in sacred laws in general. The ram is then divided and one back leg kept intact. The rest of the body or part of it is stripped of meat and this meat is put on the table. The clean bones are also preserved. After displaying this meat and probably also the back leg and the bones, the ritual is concluded by taking some meat from the table, apargmata, and burning it together with the back leg and the bones. The rest of the meat is eaten in the sanctuary. The burning of bones, more bones than usual, the usual thigh bones and the tail, both at Isthmia and Selinus, must have been of ritual importance And one explanation for this action is to see it as a different and previously unrecognized aspect of theoxenia, making use of the bones and not only the meat. The display and later burning of these bones constituted a means for increasing the divinity's share at these rituals. In the end, almost the entire skeleton would join the thigh bones and the tail on the altar. The osteological evidence explored so far clearly shows that there were alternative modes of treating bones of sacrificial victims than the burning of select parts at Tusia. The increased amount of bones burnt at Isthmia can, in the light of this inscription from Selinus, be taken as an indication of theoxenia, where meat and bones were displayed for the gods, perhaps in the manner you see in these votive theoxenia models, and where the bones were later burnt. The deposition of unburnt, defleshed bones at Didyma and Cyrene may perhaps be connected with similar rituals. Also here, meat and bones could have been placed on the sacred table, and while the meat was later taken by the priest or the worshippers, the bare bones remained in the sanctuary as a part of the god's share and a commemoration of the ritual. The handling of piglets, finally, may suggest the execution of rituals with a highly particular purpose, such as purifications, or performed in a specific context, such as the thesmophoria. The bone evidence can be said to reflect the cultic reality of the Greeks more than any other kind of source material. In order to understand the role and meaning of animal sacrifice, we have to apply a model which encompasses not only the Tusia, but the entire ritual spectrum reflected by our sources. The Tusia should not be seen as an isolated action, but as a part of a complex fabric of ritual expressions aiming at creating communication with the divine. Even though Tusia clearly was the principal sacrificial ritual, it could be modified with offerings of foodstuffs, meat gifts of the trapezomata kind, theoxenia, as well as an extended burning of the victim. The bones indicate additional means for expressing such modifications. Jean-Pierre Vernant's work on Greek sacrifice has demonstrated that the structure of Tusia aimed at communicating with the gods, while at the same time defining the role and status of gods and men. The fact that Vernant did not comment upon the trapezomata and theoxenia and the role of these rituals in this context may seem surprising, but could perhaps relate to the fact that he was focusing primarily on the Prometheus myth. However, I see no contradiction here, as Vernant's model can easily be made to accommodate also these rituals. If sacrifice is to be perceived as a meal to which the gods are invited, practices such as trapezomata and theoxenia constitute additional ways of both honoring the gods and increasing the means for communication. But these rituals also serve to negotiate the divide created by Tusia sacrifice and to further underline the immortal qualities of the gods. The trapezomata and theoxenia can be seen as an offering on men's terms, as the food presented can and will finally be eaten by the human worshippers. The burning of the bones, on the other hand, is rather an offering on the gods' conditions, since what is offered cannot be eaten by humans. It is presented to the gods by burning it and transforming it into smoke, which is inedible for men. At the trapezomata and theoxenia, the gods are provided with offerings of the kind they cannot eat and only enjoy these by the timai, the honors they imply, a fact which further emphasizes that the gods are different from men. Just as the gods demonstrate their immortality by only inhaling smoke from burning bones, they also show that they are immortal by accepting the timae, the honors alone, emanating from the trapezomata and theoxenia. The bone evidence suggests that the Tusia, trapezomata, and theoxenia were not so distinct as they may seem at first. Although bones certainly were fundamental for the execution of Tusia, they may also have constituted an essential element of trapezomata and theoxenia, either being displayed and later kept as commemoration of rites performed, or burnt, perhaps as an attempt to bring gods and men closer, and by merging the ritual components of theoxenia and Tusia. To conclude, Jean-Pierre Vernant has provided us with a sophisticated model for grasping how Greek sacrificial rituals structured the interaction between gods and men, defining the immortal and the mortal, and allowing for communication between those two spheres. The burning of the bones, the ostia levka, is certainly a key feature in this process. But the osteological evidence shows that our understanding of how this process was accomplished can be increased, and that the model needs to be opened up to encompass the full ritual spectrum of the sacrificial reality. Pigs seem not to have been sacrificed by the same ritual as a traditional tusia, and the handling of unburnt bones represents alternative ways of treating animal victims. The display, deposition, and burning of bones could have been used as elements of a theoxenia, serving as additional means for bringing the gods closer while still marking that they were different. Considering that the osteological evidence largely has come to light only within the last decades, the study of Greek sacrificial rituals seems to be facing a promising future that will allow us to explore the full significance of the ostia levka, both inside and outside the fire. Thank you.